accession number 20144, reel 3.
It turned out it must have been a drying barn because of the big gap in the roof and the wall. We thought we were going to stay there for a bit of a break. Next morning, get dressed, fall in outside. This is the familiar orders to start them. We moved back down the road that we came up the day before towards the river. Halfway towards the river, we turned sharp left down a big tree-lined lane, a typical Dutch tree-lined lane. The wind was, it was very cold, because the big flat plains. We got to the road about a mile, turned sharp right, and there was, so far as you could see, a big minefield. All the mines was laid on top, anti-tank mines. Around the side and through the middle was a path cleared, probably about 3 foot. And all the mines they cleared were in piles on the path. So we followed the leader, past these orange tapes and down through the paths. Then there was a big explosion behind us. Someone had stood on something. When we stepped over the piles, we used to try and step on the, more or less on the footprint of the person in front of us. But somebody had stood somewhere, and the stretcher bearers were trying to get to the wounded, which was on the narrow path, with great difficulty, because the path was really clogged up and you couldn't move from side to side. We come out of the minefield, thankfully, into a small village or a group of farms, and it was absolutely pickled with anti-personnel mines. Little square boxes, about 6 inches square or so. I never measured them, but as I remember them. And they were put on everything. On tops of doors, on the mantelpiece, on the pump outside. There was a bicycle with one on the seat. And everywhere you can imagine was these here anti-personnel mines. Well, nobody told us. But on like us, we never touched nothing. Never touched a thing but they were like snow, these anti-personnel mines, everywhere, on windowsills. So we touched nothing and moved on through. And there was a very bad smell in that village. A very scenty smell of, a smell which I learned later was a smell of dead people. There were some dead amongst there, that one buried, I think. We never investigated because of the mines. But the smell was there, and it was remarked on, and it was a smell of death, which I later learned. We came out of the village to a small cottage with a big garden. We had a stick and pushed the door open, and it seemed fairly clear. So we all dug in the platoon in sections around the garden with a clear view in front of us. And the ones that weren't on guard slept in the, because of the coldness of the weather, we used to do, if it was really close to the enemy, we used to do two on and two off. Or if it was fairly quiet, we used to do two on and four off. So we slept in the house, and we only stayed in the one room. We never ventured out of the room. We're like sardines in there. Before it got dark, in the middle of the afternoon, Corporal Evans, and two of us was detailed to make contact with the next battalion, the Seaforth Islanders. Apparently the 4-6 Brigade was reaching down towards the river in battalions and nothing in between them. And we were warned about patrols, enemy patrols was coming over the river. And of course, the mines, we were feared of the mines. Very big morale breakers, mines. Sort of called mineitis, I should think you could call it. So we stayed. We set off from the house. We wanted to get, and we knew it got dark early, so the idea was to get there and get back in the light. We only took our rifle, bandolier, and a hand grenade each. And we kept to the middle of the path as much as we could. We were afraid to walk on the verges in case of mines. And we were listening all the time. We went for some time like this, and all of a sudden we were challenged. And we stood still in case the challenger was trigger happy. Sergeant Evans gave the password. And we were directed to their headquarters. Now, Sergeant Evans was in making his report. And he was a very long time. It was dimps, getting dark before we set off back. And to say it was a nightmare is underestimating it. We felt our way down the pass, wondering whether we were going in the right direction. Then we came to a canal, which we had crossed, so we knew we were near enough there. So we moved up the canal to find there was a blown bridge there, or concrete across it. And we crossed it, and as we got near, we heard the familiar voice of Rifleman Patterson challenge us in the Scottish twang. So that was another patrol. During the night, I had just done my stag or sentry duty outside, settling down for me 4 hours sleep. Stand to. There was a panic on, so we grabbed our rifles and all went to our slit trenches. The person on guard on the Bren gun reported seeing people moving past our front. He had never challenged them. We stood out there for some time thinking any of us had been seeing things. And there was a section in a cottage about 50 yards to our front and right. And all of a sudden, there was a hell of a tatter going on over there. Their Bren gun opened up in the dark night, firing tracer bullets, like chains. It used to form like a chain and go in the path. Then all of a sudden, it must have been a big enemy fighting patrol, because they set off probably a bazooka or something into the bungalow. And fired and then passed on. So in reflection, it was a good job that the or sentry never challenged them, because the name of the game was self-survival. I think they had a couple of casualties in that section, but that was another section, so we didn't know much about other sections. They used to come and go. All of a sudden you think yourself, where's so-and-so, and he'd have been wounded or killed or something like that. We stayed the night. The next day, fall in outside, get fell in. We moved off. We thought we were going back to our barn in Ruggle. But instead we turned to towards the river, and we ended up in a place called, a village called Buggenham. It was about 500 yards from the River Maas. And there was a big, to our right, there was a great big bridge blown up, a railway bridge. And this is where we spent 7 weeks, on and off. Every so often we used to go back to our big barn for a break. But we more or less made ourselves at home in Buggenham. We took Sembatoon, took up a position at the end of the village. The three sections in different houses. So we, our Bren pit was around the other side of the house that someone had dug before us. So we dug a hole in the side of the wall so that we could get the Bren pit easy. And the people that had left the house had left all their belongings. So we ripped the thick curtains off the front room and hung over the hole. But there was a big hole blown in the front of the house anyhow, so that caused a draft. But we settled in for the winter. We put a wire out of the Bren pit with string with the tins on for emergency rattling and one thing and another. There was probably, 20 chicken left behind in the outhouse. So we thought we'd be all right for eggs. But I think the cold weather must have put the chicken off, because they never laid. So all over the 7 weeks, we ate them. We used to stew them. We found a great big stove, upright stove, in another house, which we moved into our room, and put the chimney out through a wooden hole in the boarded up window with a tin around to stop it burning. We found a great big pot and we used to boil these chickens in the pot. And I was a butcher, so my butcher would come in handy. I was a quarter a month. We used to have a quarter each with our evening meal. On searching the house, we found a great big jar of black treacle. So when we had to fetch the meals, we used to send Rifleman Ford with them, because he knew the Kirks. He had been in the Cameroonians longer than most of us. He knew the Kirks. And he used to scrounge. They used to send the loaves, and big round loaves, the end piece, they used to cut off the crust. And we used to get all the crusts in the box. So we used to toast the crusts on the side of the stove and put this here black treacle on. We'd done this for about 2 weeks. And the message come round not to eat any food we found, because it may be poisoned. But in our case, it was not effective. Christmas came. The day before Christmas, we made out the stove and moved back to our big barn in Ruggle. And that's where we spent Christmas. We had a Christmas dinner in another barn. Two sit-ins. Most of it came out of a tin, but it was very acceptable. And then we moved back into our big barn, and there were some faggots of wood outside that had been stored by the farmer, whoever had been there. So we made a big bonfire out of these faggots of wood and had a big Christmas warm-up. After Christmas, it started snowing. It snowed and froze, snowed, froze, snowed again. And we moved back to our winter quarters down at the start of the Mass. And every night, I should have mentioned this before, every night, one man from each section, and there was 9 sections in the company, had to go on patrol down to the River Maas, about 100 yards this side of the river, and stay the night. And every so often we set the fire of the Brengon across the river to let the enemy know we were there. Of course, there was five or six companies, and the Brengon was firing on and off all through the night. We used to take the Brengon from where we were stopping, take it about 300 yards and fire it across, and then move back quickly in case the enemy opened fire, which they used to on one of our sections that was nearest to them every morning on a fixed line. But the machine gun was firing high and used to hit the roof, but that section had to stay in the cellar. They lived in the cellar for all the 7 weeks we were there. And then when it snowed, they give us snowsuits for the patrol, and we patrolled down the river in our snowsuits, taking with us a blanket each, which we spread out on the snow, and it froze, got wet and froze, and we used to use it as a wind protection. Stand up, stop the wind. We rode out in the open all night, and your legs used to freeze up to your knees, stamping nearly all night trying to keep the circulation going. And we had one tin each of, for the first time, of self-eaten soup. You lit a cigarette and touched a cap, and the soup would warm up. And of course this acted as a hand warmer, and put it in your pocket and warm yourself nearly all over with this, except for your feet. So we used to be glad to, if you were detailed, to go and fire the Bren to get a bit of circulation back in your feet. In the morning, in the dawn, we used to take a telephone with us and connect it to a wire. We followed the wire back to our positions. And the sergeant major was there. It was the only time we had a tot of rum. They say about this army rum and that, everybody keeps getting to give me rum. But that was the only time we had rum. He gave us a tot of rum each, and it used to warm you could feel it warm yourself right through. And we had breakfast, and we had the following morning off, which we used to go to have a good sleep and take our boots off. And that was near enough the only time we used to take our boots off. Through all the time we were there. We stayed there for 7 weeks, and it was the only time we never had a casualty. I heard of one casualty from another company. There was the old shell used to fire just to keep us awake. And I know one man that caught pneumonia. And he... it's a wonder we didn't all catch pneumonia, really. Then we moved, after the 7 weeks, the Canadian paratroopers came and relieved us. And we moved back to our barn again. And an incident. We never had much to do, so they came around and said there was an ENSA show in a village about 5 miles away. Corporal Grant and myself was the only ones that wanted to go. So the transport came, a lorry, and picked us up. And with about 20 others, we went for the ENSA show. Got to the village, and the ENSA show had been cancelled. So we agreed amongst ourselves to have an hour or so in the village and report back to this certain spot at a certain time. So Corporal Grant and I, we found a little cafe with watery beer and a large band and a large fire. So we had a good warm through. And in plenty of time, we went back to the appointed place, and the lorry had gone. We were in plenty of time, So we cursed the driver, and I suppose the other chaps had got there, and they wanted to get out of the cold and said everybody was there, and we were the only two from our company. So we set off back the road. Put all the road was frozen, ice frozen, and everywhere was white with snow. We set off back the road. It must have probably about 5 miles to Ruggle, I think, and we knew there was a main road going through Ruggle, about probably 2 or 3 kilometres back, so we'd make it a left. We were walking past this, we'd come to a smallest village with all the houses had their roofs off. There had been a battle for them, obviously. And the church, the steeple was hanging off the church, and there wasn't no roof on the church. So Corporal Grant and I stopped for a pee, just by the graveyard. And all of a sudden, from the church, the organ started playing. It must have been about 11 o'clock in the night. And the organ was playing. So we packed up and ran. Now, nobody would be playing the organ at 11 o'clock in the night in a bombed out church, in a shell of a church. We finally got a lift in an open top Jeep back door to outside Ruggle, and we turned in for the night. Now, it wasn't until sometime after, years after, that I read a book, that someone had the same experience of the organ playing in the church. It was the wind blowing in the empty shell of the church, blowing up through the crippled organ pipes, and the sounds was coming out. So we put it all down to experience. A few days after, we were loaded into the lorries, an unknown destination. We found ourselves back in Tilburg for a rest, for a week's rest. The civilians were very short of food, and that we used to give them a bit of our food, and they made us very welcome. And they had a nice stove, so we had a good warm food, and we had a shower in the local baths. And after the 7 days, all divisional signs was to be removed. All the transport had their divisional signs blacked out. We were loaded in the lorries. Rumours were going around that we were going back to be for guard duties, communication duties and all that. After some hours, probably about 6-8 hours, we heard the rumble of the guns again. And the military presence was really big. We passed 51st Island Division was there. 43rd Welsh Division was here. Wessex Division. And we ended up in a big school, windowless school, with a load of guards armoured tanks. So we laid our blanket on the floor and slept on the floor. The next day we were briefed, and we had an old group, and obviously this was to be the big one. It was the Siegfried Line, the much published Siegfried Line. The company commander explained it to us. We had sand models and all to show where the enemy positions was. The company commander explained it as we were going in as the front line of a football team with 15 div in the middle with centre forward. And there were said to be 1,000 guns with 1,000 rounds. I think probably more guns at the time it was, but I think it was more. And they were to shell. And we were to go up underneath the creeping barrage. Every 4 minutes, I think it was, the barrage was going to send down smoke. And we were to move up 400 yards to the orange smoke. then the shelling would start again and lift. And we were to follow it up. We went in under, we were going in under this barrage. Well, come the night, we had a sort of a company concert. And there was three officers in our company at the time. Officers didn't stay long, they came and went. And they sang Three Old Ladies Locked in the Lavatory. They were there from Friday to Saturday. Two of these officers was missing when we come with the Siegfried Line. I think one of them went on patrol and the other one, I don't know what happened to him. Ours was the only platoon with an officer when we came into the Siegfried Line. We didn't come out, we bashed on. Rifleman Baker was a cockney. And he was telling dirty jokes. The door opened and the padre walked in. So we had to pack up that and we had to sing song. We went to bed that night. And the planes started to come over. Cleve was to be wiped out by bombers. The planes come over, coming overloaded and going back empty, I suppose. The different sort of, different, just that little different sort of sound. And then all of a sudden, this barrage opened up. And there was two 25-pounders in the back of the garden behind us. And it was rattling the tiles on the roof. This went on for hours, the barrage. Next morning we got up and had our breakfast. And all automatic weapons had to be tested. So we went out into the playground, the kiddies' playground, and fired our automatic weapons into the edge. We started off moving out of the school. And of course we used to wear our steel helmet chin straps under our, at the back of our head for comfort, not under our chin. As we got round the corner, there was our regimental sergeant major, stood up spick and span as if he was on a parade ground, shouting to us to put our chin straps under our chins, do up our buttons, smarten ourselves up. You'd think you were going to a big parade instead of going up to move up underneath the artillery barrage. We went out of Nijmegen, it was getting hilly then. We were used to flat country and all. It's getting more hilly through the forest. And all of a sudden, there was a terrific explosion in the field next to us. And something went over edge like an express train going over. A tank commander popped his head out of the tank. Of course, we all took cover, what we could. Instinct, you'd always die for cover. Instinct played a lot of part in it. And he told us it was what they called carpet bombing. It was a field full of mobile rockets. And they all fired at once and formed like a carpet. That was the first time we come across them. I think they were used in Normandy for the first assault. We moved on up the road and there was about six Germans there, wounded, stretched right across the road. With a medical orderly there, with a Red Cross on his front and a Red Cross on his back. And someone had given him a cigarette. But they never had no matches. They were asking for fire. So I'll give the medical order a box of matches. I suppose sort of a human thing to do. We moved on and there was a first aid station there, a freshly made first aid station with loads of white bandages and red spots. The sort of thing that you always see when you're going into battle, just encourage you. The barrage was falling over to our right on the edge of the ricefield forest. Our job was to go up the tight left hand side of the ricefield forest and clear up the top of the hill. That was A Company.